everybody. We just brought the moon over the mountain.
Hello, Ma. Hello, Pa. It wasn't much of a fight. I stood right back, but not for long.
Quiet. This broadcast is coming to you through the courtesy of
99.1 FM, CJAM, Redefining Radio in Windsor and Detroit.
Are you listening? Now, don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. We'll soon be with you.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
That's right, you're listening to You Talking to Me. I'm your host, Big JD. Acting is a serious business, well, unless you're in comedy. But seriously, to compete in the industry today, you need to know your stuff. And what is that stuff, you ask? I say it's the stuff dreams are made of. But of course, it's an art as well. Here to talk about the art of acting, we're joined by acting coach Penny Templeton. Hi, Penny. Welcome to You Talking to Me.
Thank you very much, Big JD.
So you say we're all actors in some capacity.
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, we play many different roles in our lives. For instance, if we go to our place of worship, that's one kind of role that we play. Our place of business is another role that we play with our friends, with our family. So we are different kinds of characters in our lives.
Yeah, I don't really look at it that way, but that it makes it sound
right?
So simple. Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about how you know someone's acting through verbal and nonverbal gestures, and maybe you can start with verbal.
Well, I think the point I want to make first is that we're always using our radar to figure people out, including if you go to a movie and a character comes on screen, You're trying to figure out, is it a good character, is it a bad character? If we're looking at politicians, you know, in debate, you know, are they being truthful, are they not? 20 years ago, we believed everything the politicians told us pretty much. But now we see so much communication through the television set that we've become more astute. So you listeners are probably aware of some of these things subliminally, but when I point them out to you, you go, oh, yes.
Sure.
So you're talking about verbal first?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so verbal first. So is the person dropped into themselves? You know, or do they seem comfortable with their voice? Or are they in a high, strident place? When they're asked a question, do they answer the question right away? Or do they pause to think of how they're going to answer it, rather than just giving a real reaction to the question? Do they push through a question? You know, just keep going on and on and on, not to answer the question.
Babbling.
rambling on purpose.
Rambling, yeah.
Or do they speak about other things besides the direct point that the question's asking?
That's a politician for you.
Yes, and the quality of their voice.
Right.
You know, are the muscles warmed up in their throat? Are they comfortable with what they're saying? Because basically what we're looking for is their truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be, and this it doesn't just have to be politics, but in situations that we're in, we don't need to agree with everything the person's saying. But if we understand that they're coming from that centered place, then we're generally comfortable with them because we know who they are.
And then nonverbal gestures, I guess body language, facial movements and things like that?
That is a real key. So when you're watching the TV screen, look for instance, last week there was a candidate who was in the States that was talking about how he had all the delegates and, you know, he was going to win the election. And as he was saying it, he was shaking his head no.
Oh, wow.
That's his subconscious. The subconscious immediately responds in the face and in the body gestures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to watch them. And I think one of the biggest clues is, and this goes for anyone who's asked a direct question, watch their immediate split-second reaction. That's the key. Because if you could do a freeze frame, you would see that they feel comfortable with it, or there's fear, or there's anger. They can't change that.
Right.
And if someone pauses, it means that they're trying to bring up what they want people to see.
Now let's talk about using acting techniques to build confidence.
That's what acting techniques are about, so that you can be your best self, so that, you know, on stage, so that you're not nervous, so that you can be hooked in and clear in what you're doing and not be afraid. And there are many acting techniques that are wonderful for actors that work for all of us in general. And one is breathing. Breathing is so important. And I don't mean hyperventilating, but just that stream of breath. Because when we get nervous, we tend to hold our breath. And that freezes us. And as an actor, and I speak about this in my book, Acting Lions, when you hold your breath, all of your real instincts and reactions go right out the window. So in a situation, in a stressful situation, keep breathing and let that stream of breath keep happening. In fact, all emotion comes off of the breath. If we stop breathing, it's gone.
Acting, it can sharpen our communication skills as well?
Absolutely. Especially actors that understand that it's not just about saying words. The most important thing is to realize it's a commission. Every acting job is a commission. Every script is a commission. So, and with all of us in life, if you're speaking in front of a group of people or a minister giving a sermon in church, any kind of experience that you're going to be going through in that area, you want to say, okay, what's my purpose? You know, what's the end result I want to achieve? And then how am I going to do that? And so the first thing you want to do is get people's attention. And then you want to bring home your point in interesting ways, different colors and different dynamic ways, changing rhythms and things to bring the audience along with you. And then you want to end it on a great note with making the audience want to go out and buy what you're talking about or vote for you or understand the points that you're making and change their point of view. So that's very, very important because if you don't have a plan, how are you going to be clean and clear in what you're trying to achieve? And a lot of good communication and really connecting with people is not being all over the place, because sometimes untruthfulness can be connected with just not being effective.
Mm-hmm.
The person may not be effective at what they're doing, so they're freezing and they're blinking and they look like they don't know what they're talking about or they're not being truthful.
And talent really needs to stand out above others in this day and age because it's such a competitive environment. What are some of the things that they can do to stand out?
Well, a couple of things. One thing that artists and actors need to do is, first of all, find out who they are. Because if you don't know who you are, how are you going to communicate different characters? And also, a character is a creation. So when you're making a creation, there's nothing there. And I think the best actors fill it with different sides of their real truth. So for instance, if you're doing Macbeth, you want to say, okay, he's feeling depressed and pushed by his wife and torn. When did I last feel that? And you can say some sentences and things that bring you to that and then say the words, the character, and that will marry you right into what the character's feeling, because audiences connect with real feelings. And that goes with actors, that goes with politicians, and it goes with, you know, all of us in our lives. You can be a mother and want to connect with your children. It's very important that they get the clear signals that you are really there in your authentic self, communicating with them.
And now the acting profession has changed, and I know you talk about tools that actors need in their repertoire to compete and be successful.
Right.
Tell us about some of these tools, and we're talking about video and Skype and some of this new technology.
Yes. Well, today the acting profession is just flying. And so how does a young actor or even an older actor who wants to work in the business, and I think most actors, if they could, would want to work consistently in the business, how do you have a career or how do you be the best actor you can be? Well, you have to understand what's going on out there. So you want to find out what the newest techniques are that they're using on sound stages, for instance, for film work or in theater or on television, because when you get your opportunity, you're going to be jumping into a pool with people that have been doing it for a long time. So if you understand how lighting works, and you understand where the voice needs to be, and you understand how to break down your scripts and make great choices, and you bring all that, then the effective actors and the stars, the ones that have been doing it a long while, will notice you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's rare. A lot of actors don't think they need to do a lot of these things. So the ones that learn the craft, learn who they are first, bring it to themselves so they're not acting different roles, but they're really there, learn the technical aspects, and also learn how the business is today. So it's in three parts. It's an artistry technique, and I call it the business of acting, or the business of artistry.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some wonderful actors who have no concept of what the business is like out there, and therefore they don't connect with them out there. You know, you can't work 20 hours on an audition that you've gotten the night before. You have to understand how to use your time within those constraints. And that's what some of the techniques are for. For instance, the 10 to 1, crying, how to cry in 10 seconds, that I work on, that is a technique that I teach to actors so that they can be in their zone and bring up tears whenever they need to. And this, Big JD, you'll get a kick out of this. That exercise actually came to me from a 7-year-old actress that I was working with.
Oh, wow.
And her name is Katie Kahanovitz. She's done several Broadway shows since. And she was like a 40-year-old in the 7-year-old body. And she came in one morning and she said, "Oh, Penny, do you want to hear this acting game that I created?" And I'm like, "Sure, Katie, what is it?" And then she goes, 10, starts up happy, 9, 8, 7. And by the time she got to 1, she was in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Wow." Out of the mouths of children, right? And I use that base to teach a technique for learning how to cry when you're under pressure. Because when I was acting, when I was on stage, in rehearsals, I could bring up the emotion very, very easily. But on stage, it was much more difficult. And I learned the key, to make a long story short, was we don't try to cry. We try not to cry.
Right.
And to keep breathing and holding it back and relaxing the face at the same time. So I put those keys in with that exercise, the 10 to 1. And, you know, I share it with all the actors. And they do it in the shower in the morning.
Well, yeah.
I tell them they have to do it every day, and the shower is a great place. So they can bring up tears when they're doing a movie and, you know, there's a lot of pressure on set if it's a feature film or any kind of film, even if it's a student film. There's always pressure, you know, when you're on. So techniques help you to be able to do the job under these difficult circumstances.
So I want to talk about your classes in New York. You also do one-on-one, and what types of other techniques do you use in your teaching?
Well, one of the biggest things that I do is crack them open right away. And when I first started teaching, I have a studio, my own studio now, Penny Templeton Studio.
The website, by the way, as well, PennyTempletonStudio.com.
.com, yeah. Correct. And the book is www.actinglions.com.
Right.
And in fact, I have put a free chapter on there for your listeners about creating you. And they can go to actinglions.com and just push on the button and download the chapter.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So to get back to your question, in working with actors, the first group of actors that I had were very talented. They were advanced actors, but they just weren't emotionally breaking out as fast as I thought they needed to be. So I created an exercise called the I'm So Pissed. It's very well known that I teach. They face a wall and they think of something that made them upset. And it doesn't even have to be something big. It could be their roommate dropped left clothes on the floor, you know, or their boyfriend canceled on them again. And they marinate in it, and I always say, see it on a big screen, hear it on loudspeakers, let it get to you. They're not allowed to move their feet because they have to condense it. And then they turn around and they let it go at the highest level in a primal scream or just a couple of words or even a swear word. And the idea is to be able to contain all that, to bring all that energy, start with a spark, pour gasoline on it, bonfire, turn around and let it go. Because anger is one of the emotions that we're most afraid of showing. So when they do this every week in class, they get relaxed and they drop into themselves. And then it's even more powerful. So if they're doing a play or something on a series and it involves anger, they can do any form of it from 1 to 10. And this is interesting. I had one actress, her name is Sarah Winter, and she starred in The Sixth Day with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know if you remember that movie, but she played the alien, the bad girl. And she said, "Penny, I got that part from the I'm So Pissed." Because her character was recloned through the movie. And every time she'd be recloned, she'd wake up furious. And she said, "It was easy for me because we do it in class all the time." Another thing that I like to work on in class is I give them cold material. They each get the same cold scene. It's only one page, but it's a movie scene or a series or something that's contemporary. And they go down the hallway for 15 or 20 minutes, and then I put them on tape one at a time, and I take the material away from them. I take the script away from them. And so they get used to memorizing material and figuring out a scene very quickly. But it doesn't stop there. Then we look at it on a movie screen in my studio. I have a full movie screen so that they can see their own work, because that's a big key that I use to moving them forward quickly. They can then participate in their own process. So if I say to them, you know, you need to be more grounded, you know, you need to connect your emotions, then they'll see it. And when they get it, then they can move faster on their own. But after that part of the exercise or technique, they take the scene home over the week, and they work on it on their own. And some of them will dress as the character and actually set up the scene in a car, or they're just fabulous, because they're trying to really make the scene be real. And they bring it in the next week, and we plug them in, and we look at if they achieved what they were working on. And we all learn from it. I mean, I'll see an actor bring something, and it's fabulous, and I'll go, "What was that? What were you doing?" And, you know, you might say, "Well, I'm working on this." And I'll say, "Well, how did you do that?" And then again, they throw the ball back to me and keep me moving forward in what I'm teaching them.
Now, you also do speaking engagements and things of that nature. Do you speak to entire companies as well? I know we talked a little bit about, you know, like politicians or business professionals and things, but will you speak to an entire company?
Well, I have. There was a company that worked with expert witnesses. And they hired me to come in for a weekend. That was wonderful, and to work with them. And one of the keys that I used was putting them on camera. And again, showing them their body language, showing them their, you know, verbal expressions, and if they were comfortable with themselves, and helping them to achieve that, because we only had one weekend. And it was very gratifying. The results were very gratifying. One of the big keys that I use are substitutions. That's what we call it in acting. So, for instance, if an expert witness is going to be talking to a jury of, you know, 12 men and women, and they don't know who they are and how they're judging that expert witness, I will say, "Who is somebody that you're comfortable with? Your best friend or your neighbor or your brother?" Plug that person into one of the jurors and talk to that person. Never talk to a group. Never talk to a group. Always personalize it and be talking to that person that's going to help you to achieve what you want to do with that group of people.
Tell us about you being asked for your expert commentary by ABC News on the faces of the mourners during the funeral for Kim Jong-il.
That was quite an experience.
Yeah.
They asked me for my commentary and my expertise, because there was a lot of controversy about whether the mourners, whether they were really mourning. And I, you know, was kind of concerned, because all I could imagine was some poor farmer being placed against a wall and executed because a New York City acting teacher says he's a lousy actor. So, but when I got in the studio and they showed me the film clips, it wasn't difficult for me because, first of all, it's a different culture. And there are different cultures, and even in our own culture, where you give the person who's passed away a big send-off. And for instance, in New Orleans, you know, if grandma passes away, you might hire a brass jazz band and mourners to help her go into the next life.
Right.
And so we even have it here. So I saw a lot of that, coupled with the fact that this leader had been ruling for 17 years. So even though he was oppressive, everything's going to change. And will his son, you know, stay in office? You know, will people attack us since we're vulnerable right now? Mm-hmm. And so I saw a lot of fear. So I saw real emotions. They were out very far mourning, getting on their hands and knees and mourning. But this is not unusual in other cultures.
Right.
One of the books that I read recently, Mao's Last Dancer, talked about when Chairman Mao passed away, how, you know, everyone in that country just was at a standstill and were devastated. So I felt that was kind of a similar situation and was quite interesting. There was one freeze frame of four soldiers with their heads bowed, and you almost felt this dense sadness, and I point to that and honestly say they are really in their truth.
Now, you also come from a family of generations of theater actresses. In fact, weren't
yes.
you warned by them not to get into this field?
I was. My great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and I'm the fourth generation. And these are, you know, all women who gave up many things in their lives to be actresses. My great-grandmother came over on board ship, and she became a concert singer. She was in a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta that was produced on Broadway, and she tragically died in Central Park. She was thrown by a horse and dragged died a year later. And my grandmother was 8. My grandmother was sent over to England and came back as soon as she could when she was 18 and met with great-grandmother's dear friend Tony Pastor, who was a very famous producer, sort of like the David Merrick of our day. Mm-hmm. And she did tours of The Wizard of Oz and Babes in Toyland. She was in the earthquake in San Francisco.
Wow.
And she grabbed her suitcase and her roommate's doll, because her roommate carried a doll, a little Bo Peep doll, and ran down to the theater, but they wouldn't let anyone get near the theater to help. So then she ran down to the bay and was picked up by, rowboat, and opened her suitcase, and she had a picture of her mother and a deck of cards in her suitcase.
Wow.
So, and during the Depression, when my mother was acting, these were hard times. They went through a lot for their art,
sure.
But they would have done it all over again. And but they were, I think, afraid for me that I'd be living kind of the rough times that they did. So it was kind of like, well, you know, and my father, especially, who wasn't in theater, anything but that. So I had a career. I actually worked for Bloomingdale's for several years. But when my children went to school, I started with a little theater. And I knew the moment I walked into that little theater that I was home. And I made my journey from there. And had some role models that that helped me. There was an actor, Paul Sorvino, and he was in the movie Nixon and Goodfellas, and he was my first real professional acting teacher, and he was very encouraging. And then when I was working, went to New York. In fact, when he went to L.A. to shoot some movies, he said, "Go to New York." And I met with a famous acting teacher, Wynn Hammond. Wynn is Denzel Washington's teacher and John Leguizamo's teacher, just to mention a few. And Wynn, you know, I auditioned for Wynn, and he said, you're a great actress, but, you know, you live in New Jersey, and you know, you have a family, and I just, you know, don't think you'll be able to be as committed as you could be. And I said, I have to do this. I promise you, I'll be one of your best actors. You know, I've been doing it in New Jersey, and I've come here, and I have to do it. And finally, he said, okay, with a twinkle, you know. And I worked with Wynn for 3 years, and then I did Joyce Carol Oates' wonderful play, I Stand Before You Naked, off-Broadway with Wynn directing, which is just a wonderful experience. So I've had wonderful mentors and role models. The first actor that I worked with, and this is how I became an acting teacher, was on a soap opera, All My Children. Oh. I don't know if Canadian viewers know All My Children.
Yeah,
he was Trevor on All My Children.
Okay.
And his wife was in my acting class as Susan, and she was on the soap opera Loving. And we were good friends. And I was trying to support myself in my acting at the time, and she said, Penny, you need a job. I was working for an agent who was paying me about 50 cents an hour. She said, we've got to get you out of that agency. And then she called me and she said, my husband, James, needs someone to work his lines with him and the script, because his scene partner on the show at the time just didn't want to do that. Sometimes that's the way it goes. So I was everybody in Pine Valley. And that's where the town where everything took place. And when James would go on set, I would go on set and watch the monitor. And finally he said to me, as we would discuss the acting at the end of the day, he said, you have a good eye, Penny, and I'm going to train you to be my coach. So he said, I want you to talk to the lighting people, the sound people, Judy Wilson, who was the casting director. I want you to watch all of the auditions. And he just gave me free rein. And one of the things that we worked on together was the craft of soap opera was so fast that by the time you learn the lines, you were up on set.
Sure.
Now it's even faster. So we put together through our training and our techniques in our script analysis, we put together a system of breaking down scripts that helps you to get deeper beyond the words. And I've been using that ever since. It's just a tremendous way for actors to really know what a scene is about in every beat and to make fabulous acting choices and know you're coming in with something that's going to make the material come alive. And I think that's what great actors do.
Right, and you include some of that in your book as well, and the book we've been talking about, Acting Lions, Unleash Your Craft in Today's Lightning-Fast World of Film, Television, and Theater. And
correct.
Tell us again where we can get the book.
Well, the book is always available online through Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. In New York, it's available at the Drama Bookshop. And I know we have a lot of Canadian actors that have ordered the book. And so thank you to all of you who have who've read it and emailed me and written me letters about it. We're going into our second printing this month.
Well, look out, America, then, because we're going to have some good Canadian actors.
You know, it's about putting all of the craft together, too, because all of your training is good. It's great. It doesn't matter where you started, but you wanted to develop the tools that you need. So you can't just work with one kind of, you know, I always say if you're a builder, you don't just have a electric saw. You got to have other tools in your toolbox. So you want to have the great techniques, and that's why I have the chapter on the master teachers, because they started with the great techniques. Now, what I find that I've worked on is updating them, not changing them, but helping them to work in today's today's area of art in acting. For instance, I had one actress who was on the pilot of Sex and the City. Do you know that show?
Nope, Sex and the City, sure.
Oh, good. And so she was in the pilot, and they showed her all through the pilot. It was done in storytelling technique, where you had her voiceover, but the character didn't speak until the end when she was dumped and was sitting at the table with the girls and crying about how this man dumped her. So I looked at it and said, wow, we have to work this on camera. And that was the first time that I actually took a camera and put it on an actor's face and worked to get the colors of the emotions. Because when we feel emotions, when the actor is feeling those emotions, that moves the molecules of the audience. And we knew it was very important, since her character, you know, wasn't actually speaking, that we could see what she was feeling. So we did that, and I heard that it was great, but I never got a chance to see it. Because, I don't know, in those days we didn't, you know, you couldn't record ahead and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So when I was a judge for the film festival, the New York Film Festival, what was I judging? One of the things was the pilot from Sex and the City. So I got to see the actress do the role, and it was great. It was great to see that work that we had worked on had really paid off. So you actors out there, you know, find a core technique, work on it, and then say, what do I need next? What kind of actor do I want to be? And then you must find role models that are doing it. It's very, very important that, in other words, role models that can not give you shortcuts, but give you the real truth about what's happening now. So the actors that I'm working with that are on series and in films and in theater, I'm always dialoguing with them. What's new? What do they need to learn? And putting it into the work that we do in the studio. In fact, this month, we worked on real auditions. Everyone did the same scene each week. I posted the scene on Monday. They had class on Wednesday and Thursday, so they had a couple of days to work on the audition scene. Mm-hmm. And then the actors, I divided into two groups. The first group became the casting director and the director and the producers. The other group were the actors coming in and auditioning. We put them on camera. We asked. We had an interview, just like it is for a real audition. And they graded them. And then we switched it around. And they each had a card. They didn't sign their name, but they just wrote what they really felt about their performance. And it's been tremendous because you learn so much by being on the other side of the table. So that was something that I brought into the classroom for this month. I felt it was something that would help them, especially interviews. You know, the moment you walk through the door, we judge you, mm-hmm. whether it be business or acting. And as I tell the actors, a lot of them need to work on their elevator speech.
Right.
You know, you've got to know. And here's what those of you can do. If you're going on an interview, if you're going on interviews, I think a lot of us are, set up a camera and have a friend interview you. Because if you look comfortable on camera, you can judge yourself. If you're not blinking, you know, you may be blinking a lot, but once you get comfortable, you'll stop blinking and start breathing and just work on yourself. Work on ask yourself, what could they ask me? And develop answers for those questions. In fact, I had one actor last night, and one of the questions that one of the so-called casting directors asked him was, describe yourself in three words. And he came out with three great words to describe himself. Passionate, funny, and I forget what the other, inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of class, I said, Jonathan, that was fabulous. You really nailed that. And he said, well, remember a couple of weeks ago I talked about how I was very, very shy and into myself. And he said, and you told me that was not a good thing to say in an interview. I said, no. And he said, well, I put myself on camera and I worked on that. He said, so I was ready for that. I said, good for you. So we just try and work on these things and improve ourselves from them, because I think the biggest thing that I look for in actors is what we call profound simplicity. Clean, clear, and profound. Having mm-hmm. depth and resonating with the truth.
We have a great drama department here at the University of Windsor, a great communications, media, and film program. In fact, we'll be offering an MFA in film. So I want to ask you a little advice for students. I usually ask graduating students advice for them, but what about students like in their first year or second year maybe? How can those students best prepare for what lies ahead?
You can't just depend on what you're getting in classes. You have to have your own workout routine, and you have to develop. You have to keep developing the other sides that you need to be working on at the same time. I'll give you a great example. I have a student who is at the Old Vic training. She's a scholarship student, and Now, she worked with me for 3 years and got a scholarship there and was immediately cast as Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. She still worked on the balcony scene with me by Skype.
Okay.
And we also work on film technique by Skype. She sends me scripts that she'd like to work on, characters she'd like to work on, and we break them down on the phone. We break down the script. She works on it, and she sends me a Vimeo, I think it's called, and I click it open, and I look at her performance, and then I give her notes on it the next time we coach on Skype.
Great.
So Skyping and a video camera have become wonderful tools for actors and the internet. You can look up, you know, great acting teachers. There's a wonderful Uta Hagen tape on her class, mm-hmm. where she goes through all of her techniques, and it's just fabulous. And my students are constantly making me aware of, you know, these wonderful audition, great auditions online and blogs. So you want to keep finding, again, the truth out there and learning that on your own. So you can't just be dependent on your programs.
I'd like you to give out contact information again, your website addresses.
My website is www.pennytempletonstudio.com. And the book information is on the same website, but you can go directly to the book and the free chapter on creating you, www.actinglions.com.
Great. And the book, Acting Lions. Really appreciate you being on the show, Penny.
Thank you very much. And thanks for all the homework that you did. I'm very impressed.
No problem. Thanks, Penny. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
A wonderful acting coach, Penny Templeton. Check out her book, Acting Lions. You can go to actinglions.com and as well, pennytempletonstudio.com. There's a link to Penny on the youtalkingtome.ca website. And you sure don't want to miss next week's show. We've got Marco Braddock and Mike Kozak from Tease in the studio. And Mark Braddock, of course, known now for his role in the Canadian Pawn-a-thon. He is the 21st century pawn man. See you then. I'm Big JD. This is You Talking to Me. Thanks for listening.